I'd like to take my text from Colossians 1, verse 9 and verse 10. Colossians 1, verse 9, verse 10. For this cause we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and desire that ye might be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding, that ye might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, be fruitful in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God. I'd like to take this and preach on a message entitled, Know God. Pastor, if you would please pray over the message. I was struck by the thought, you know, you hear of young people and I graduated from high school or I graduated from college or I got out of the military. What are you going to do? Oh, I'm going to find myself. I was like, hasn't yourself been with you all this time? I guess I kind of understand that, you know, now that I'm done with this course of education or a very structured way of life, now I'm just going to go find what it is that I want to be, I guess, absent from all the structure of school or military service or whatever. I've always kind of thought that was kind of an odd thing to do, though. Find myself. But, having thought on this a little bit, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. But knowledge, we talk about knowing things. Oh, I want to know this person or that person. I want to know what it is that they're all about. And knowledge equals intimacy. Intimacy is a complete understanding or a better knowledge or a fuller understanding. Playing with the idea in the biblical sense of knowledge. Lay that aside. Hebrews 8, verse 7. Hebrews 8, verse 7. For if that first covenant had been faultless, then should no place have been sought for the second. For finding fault with them, he saith, Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant that I have made with the fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, and I regarded them not, saith the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after these days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their mind, and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And they shall not teach every man his brother, and every man his neighbor, and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord, for all shall know me, from the least to the greatest. For I will be merciful unto their unrighteousness, and the sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. As he saith, a new covenant, he hath made the first old, now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. So, when the promise is that they will come to a place where they will no longer say to one another, Know the Lord. Have we got to that place yet? I would say not. So what should be the focus of the church or evangelism? It is to bring people into a knowledge of the Lord. And that knowledge is an intimacy, a better understanding. Can we ever perfectly know all of the might and the wisdom of the Lord while in this flesh? No, I would say not. But that doesn't mean that we should not strive to enter into a better knowledge of the Lord. You ever have somebody ask you, How well do you know that person? Maybe they heard you speaking of them, and they'll kind of give you that look, like, I don't think you know that person like I know that person, because that's not exactly the take that I received, you know, regarding that person. Sometimes it makes you think, what do you know about that person? Better not to know, perhaps. Better not to know that. Better come to that knowledge for yourself, or maybe perhaps it's not necessary. My wife and I have been married nearly 19 years. It'll be 19 years and 2 weeks. 2 weeks. It'll be 19 years. I would say, matter of fact, I will say this with full assuredness that it is 100% completely accurate. No shadow of a lie or exaggeration or anything like that. She knows me far better than anybody else could possibly know me. And if, Lord forbid, if I ever took another wife, it would take about 19 years for that person to come to a knowledge of me like she has. Why? Because we've had 19 years of shared experiences. 19 years of common history. 19 years of shared dreams and hopes and faults and failures and all the things that we share in 19 years. She has a better understanding of me. She looked at me today. She said, I know that look. I know what you're thinking. What? What am I thinking? Now you're trying to change the look so I won't know what you're thinking. But when you're not trying to hide it, I know exactly what you're thinking just by seeing your face. Oh, okay. Very true, I'm sure. Knowledge is intimacy. It is a deeper understanding. She understands me like nobody else on earth could possibly understand me. In Malachi 3:10, it says, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me here now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. Now I've heard people take this, and I've probably been guilty of it myself, taking this and saying, if you really love the Lord, then you'll pay a tithe, and that is the proof that you really love the Lord. That's not what it says. What it says is, prove me. It says, prove me. God is saying, prove me by this. Do this, and you will see that I will open the windows of heaven, and I will pour you out a blessing. He said, prove me. Rely upon my word. Trust me. Prove me in this matter, and I will show you. Come to the knowledge that this is true. I was thinking about this in regards to trials and things that people face, things that I've faced. Why does it have to be that way? Perhaps we need to learn through the trial, through the adversity, sometimes by trial and error. Oop, don't want to do that again. But sometimes we need to learn through the trial that the Lord is there with us and that we are secure in Him. As our brother was testifying, I may fall, but the Lord is always just to pick me up and carry me on. He doesn't leave me there in that state. I've heard one time Christians are likened to, you know, those little punching bag toys. They got a little sandbag in the bottom of it, and you inflate them, right? And then you pop them, and they flop back over, and what do? Right back up. That's exactly how a Christian should be. Should be. So you get deflated. Then what do? I didn't mean deflated as in deceased. I just meant deflated as in without the buoyancy that we should have. That's true though, brother. You spring a leak. then you pray that that a brother or a sister in the Lord will come by and gently, with love, patch the hole and perhaps give you a restoration of the buoyancy that you have lost. Have you ever tried to sink a life preserver? I have. They actually had us do things like that in the Marine Corps. They were teaching us how a water survival, and they defined buoyancy. And one of the things, you know, if you ever shipwrecked, if you ever all of a sudden you're in the sea, they make you do this. They make you jump into the water fully clothed with all your combat gear and stuff on. Now you have to shed your combat gear. And then once you get free of your helmet and your flak jacket and all of your gear and all the things that would weight you down, you try to keep what gear you can because you may need to use it once you come out of the water. Then you unbuckle your trousers, you pull them off, you turn them inside out, you tie off the legs, then you slap the water in front of it so that the legs fill up with air. Then you put it around your neck, and it's buoyant. Some of you are trying to get past the idea. You strip off your pants. But it is a buoyant, life-saving device. And then they tell you, try to sink this. Try to sink this. And guess what? You can't do it. Why? Because it's buoyant. You can get on top of that, and unless you allow the air to spill out of it, you can't sink it. It is impossible. We, as Christians, should be buoyant. Now, you can hit it with enough force that just for a moment, it goes beneath the surface of the water. But as soon as that force is removed, what happens? Whoop! It almost like bounces once it gets back up to the surface. We need to know God in a personal, reviving, revitalizing, assured, proving sense and know that it is impossible to be destroyed, to be removed, to be cast down. When you come to that knowledge, then it will show. You won't be either deceased or deflated. I'm having fun with that, brother. Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's kind. Now, I quoted this from Hebrews, and you know, when this passage was quoted in Hebrews, it was a quotation of another passage, a prophecy that came from the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 31. Behold, the day shall come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in that day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they break, although I was an husband unto them, saith the Lord. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my law into their inward parts, and I will write it in their hearts, and will be their God. And they shall be my people. And they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord. For they shall all know me, from the least of them even unto the greatest of them, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sin no more. What a remarkable promise. Has the adversary ever come around and said, You remember when? Why even bother? Because everybody knows what you were. And everybody heard what you did. And everybody knows what you said. But I will forgive their iniquity and I will remember their sin no more. You know, knowledge is a two-way street. It's not just a knowledge that we have of God. It's not just a knowledge that we have of His power. But I've said it often enough. God knows everything. God knows us. And David said in Psalm 139, 23 and 24, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Remember when we were talking about the buoyancy? David was essentially saying to God, "Try me. Try to push me down. See if I'm not what I should be." You think God did? I think God did. Arcata High has this baseball shirt they made. They stole it from a football movie. I know, I saw the football movie. Baseball doesn't build character. It reveals it. I've said it before because I've heard it preached. Trials build character! Yeah, they suppose they could. You know what trials really do? They reveal it. Trials reveal it. But if you really want to know where you are in God, be humble like David and say, "God, try me. See if there's anything in me that's wrong." Have you ever been there, Nathan? You mean within the last half hour or so? Yes. Lord, if there's something in me that's not right and it's not well pleasing to you, show it. Reveal it. Let me know it. God knows it. God, let me know it. The adversaries know. Adversaries know. I know I didn't say the adversary. I said adversaries, multiple, plural. Acts 19, verse 13. I love this story. It's comical, but it reveals a lot. "Then a certain of the vagabond Jews, exorcists, took upon them to call over them which had evil spirits the name of the Lord Jesus, saying, 'We adjure thee by Jesus, whom Paul preacheth.' And there were seven sons of one Siva, a Jew, and chief of the priest, which did so. And the evil spirit answered and said, 'Jesus I know, and Paul, I know. But who are you?' And the following verses say, they fled naked and wounded out of the house. Because the spirit that was in the man that the spirits were in leapt on them and overcame all seven of them. But you'll catch that they said, 'Jesus, we know Jesus. And we know Paul, who preaches Jesus. But who are you? Who are you? We don't know who you are. We've never heard of you. You name Jesus, and you name the Apostle Paul. But what have you done that they were aware of?'" These adversaries, they're not all-knowing. They're not omniscient. But they did know of Jesus, and they did know of Paul. And this man, these men, didn't have no idea who they were. They had done nothing for God that the adversaries would know of. And knowledge doesn't always mean that it's a favorable relationship. You ever, you know, I kind of made the allusion to it, but oh yeah, I know that guy. Yeah, you know people that like that. "Do you know so-and-so?" "Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know him." James 2:19 says, "Thou believest that there is one God. Thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble." Oh, I know God. I believe in God. The devils know God. The devils believe in God. And they quake with fear because they know where their future is. And you've heard it said, and I'm going to say it again, it's not so much what you know, it's who you know. I have known people who possess a knowledge of God and know next to nothing else. Theologically, scripturally. They are very simple in their faith. And what they know is that they have trusted God. And God has changed their heart. And they want other people to know Jesus as they know Jesus. And I will say, they are very effective witnesses. Why? Very uncomplicated. Know this Jesus. You see, I was lost. I was undone. I was overwhelmed. I had nothing going for me in a positive direction. And then, one day, I came to know Jesus. Jesus stepped into my life. And he delivered me out of the despair that I was in. And I didn't even quote John 3:16. I didn't. Not even John 3:16. I wasn't wearing a rainbow wig. I didn't have the sign. I wasn't standing in the end zone. But a knowledge of God is far more important than any other knowledge that you could ever hope to possess. Have you ever heard the phrase,
"Will the accused please stand? We, the jury, find the defendant or innocent or."
You ever felt like you were on trial? Have you ever felt like, oh, what will happen? What have I done? What do people think that I've done? If you were accused of being a Christian, in a court of law, and put on trial, and they brought in witnesses, and I'm closing. Oops. Sorry. Didn't mean to do, sis. Up there. Oh, my goodness. Sorry. Matthew 7:21. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. A few shocking exceptions will say to me in that day, it's not what it says, friend. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And in thy name have we cast out devils? And in thy name done many wonderful works? And then I will profess unto them, I never knew Yes, it is. Yes, we want to know God and His power. Yes, we want to know of the assuredness of His salvation, and we want to know all of the promises of His Word. But it is not enough to profess. You must possess a knowledge, an intimate relationship with the Savior. It's not enough to be known as a Christian.
Oh, I know that guy. He's a Christian. He goes to church on Sunday.
It's not enough. You must know God, and you must be known of Him. And from that knowledge comes all wisdom, and all blessing, and all power, and all promise, and the ability to forgive, and to be obedient. I almost put it in there. Our God said He prefers what? Obedience to sacrifice. We are to know God, and we should desire, above all else, to hear on that day, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Pastor.